Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, hour two. It is a pleasure to be here live in Los Angeles. The show is called The Herd. A reminder, it is Halloween. The Cowherd House be handing out apples on Sunday. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1.
I think I'm in the clear. I've not seen one child in my space.
You'd be a great mom. You would be. Don't you think you'd be a great mom?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be a great mom. I'm a great aunt.
Yeah, I'm not encouraging anything. I'm just saying I think you'd be great.
I'm not ready for that.
All right, I'm not, you know. I am, listen,
I've got 10 nieces and nephews, a great niece, and another one on the way.
Let me tell you something, Joy.
Good.
I wasn't ready for it either.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, are you ever, like, ready to be a parent? No, kids are great. I love Halloween costumes. My niece dressed up my great niece as Baby Yoda. Yeah. The other day. It's the cutest thing in the world. I can't wait to see what my chubby little nephew is going to be. Yeah. They're the best.
Yeah. Kids are adorable. So Lakers lost last night. It was a historic loss. In the history of the Lakers, they were 230-0 if they ever led a game by 25 points. They've never lost. Enter Westbrook. So Westbrook, with 3:28 remaining in the second quarter, up to that point, it was the best of Westbrook. You're getting... You know, he took 2 3-pointers, he made one, he had a bunch of assists, he was very active. But because his game doesn't have a lot of nuance and he plays 1,000 miles an hour, it is hard to play perfectly when you play like he does. After 3:28 in the second quarter, he was a tsunami of turnovers and bad shots, 8 turnovers, 1 for 6 on 3. And again, his game doesn't really have a second gear. Westbrook plays one way, fast, energy. He can't play a perfect game. That's why LeBron's game... LeBron will have these nights when he's literally perfect for 4 quarters because his game has, he can beat you so many ways. His passing, his defense, his basketball IQ is off the charts. He's a very refined basketball player. So once again, we see this. Everybody wants to talk about this team as a championship team, but without LeBron, they had to go to overtime to beat a very weak Spurs team, and they blew a 26-point lead against the worst team arguably in the league. So, and the days of LeBron in the playoffs, giving you 40 minutes, giving you both ends, those are over. Like, seeding matters for this Laker team. It used to be LeBron, like in the East, you didn't even care about seeding. It just didn't matter. He'd give you 43 minutes. He'd find a way to win in Miami, away from Miami, in Cleveland, on the road. Those days are over. This team's not good enough. The bench not dependable enough. Anthony Davis' health not dependable. So the two things, not to overreact, but two things I've seen so far from the Lakers is they are bad defensively. They're allowing the most points. They're slow. They're an old, slow team. So they don't get out to the three-point line very quickly. You can spread out and just create havoc for them. They're very slow defensively. And number two is, good God, they're dependent on LeBron James to hit threes. They don't have three-point shooters. LeBron's their best three-point shooter. So James Worthy, they unraveled last night. James Worthy, former Laker great, Spectrum TV, talked about it after the game.
Well, I've seen a lot of Laker losses. This might have been like the worst loss I've seen.
Because you're up 26, right?
It just sucked that they have this mentality that they can't finish games and they think that teams are going to just lay down for them. And they got to change that. This was really ugly. I don't have a whole lot to say. I'd put him on Greyhound and let him drive back to L.A. and think about it.
When you play like Westbrook, which is 1,000 miles an hour, it's almost impossible to give you 4 consistent quarters. The players that can do that have a different kind of layered, nuanced game. Kevin Durant has that. You can get 4 great quarters. LeBron has that. I think Steph Curry, by the way, is not just shooting. There are nights Steph does other things, but that's what you get. It was a historically bad loss for the Lakers. And with that, Greg Cosell, 42 years at NFL Films. All right, so I said the line in Vegas changed drastically when Devontae Adams couldn't play, and they've won every game they've ever played without him. But I look at this offense. Tell me what the film says. Can they go in without Devontae Adams, Greg, and get in a shootout with Arizona and win?
Well, I can't answer that specifically, but I tell you what I think you might see tonight. I think you're going to see Aaron Jones, who's a very good receiver, play meaningful snaps, Colin, at the wide receiver position. Because I think they'll feel comfortable with A.J. Dillon and Kylan Hill as their running backs sharing carries. And who knows, depending on the nature of the game, it could be a night where Dillon gets 20-plus carries. But I think you will see Aaron Jones line up as a true wide receiver, not just attached from the formation the two or three or four times a game that he does in the normal course of their offense.
So Arizona, you know, Kyler, there are times it looks like flag football. I mean, he's ad-libbing his way. People are breaking off routes. What have they done to sort of maximize their skill positions? Because they got a lot of talent there.
Well, one of the things you're seeing a lot more of, and this is the true air raid, is you're seeing much more of what we call 10 personnel, meaning they line up with one back and four wide receivers. And that's very difficult for defenses to defend because corners are always at a premium in the National Football League, and not many teams have that many good corners. Some teams, in fact, don't even play with six defensive backs. They only play nickel with five defensive backs, and that pretty much guarantees that they're playing zone. So Kyler Murray has that information before the snap of the ball. But that's one thing we've seen a lot from the Cards. And the other thing, as Cliff Kingsbury sort of develops as an NFL head coach, Colin, is you're starting to see more pre-snap movement. Moore, Rondale Moore, is used quite a bit with pre-snap movement, which, by the way, was never a part of the true air raid offense. So that's why I say that Cliff Kingsbury is growing and developing as an NFL coach.
So, if any time I talk about Baker Mayfield, I get pushback. But I did say when he came into the league, his comp, he's Case Keenum with a better arm. He's got a better release, a better arm than Case, but they're about the same size, about the same athlete. And, you know, people always push back on that, but I do think Case Keenum beat Denver. I think Case Keenum will beat Pittsburgh, but I don't think he's Baker. So when you watch the film of the Browns win over Denver, did they alter things? Was it a different offense? Or is it pretty much Case do what Baker does?
Well, it's always the same offense as long as the game presents itself that way. They played a Denver team that couldn't score. So therefore, there were not really those critical situations where you needed a quarterback who was a better thrower. Baker Mayfield is a better thrower than Case Keenum.
Yep.
So if a game presents itself, Colin, where there's more long yardage situations, more third and longs, more of those kinds of situations, then Case Keenum will not be what Baker Mayfield is and what Baker Mayfield is capable of being. Baker Mayfield was a number one pick in a draft, Colin. You may not have thought he deserved to be,
right,
but Baker Mayfield was clearly thought of as a first-round talent. No one would have said that about Case Keenum. So Baker Mayfield is simply a better thrower, and therefore in those situations that demand the quarterback make more difficult throws, you'd much rather have Baker Mayfield out there.
Yeah, well said. So it was interesting. I thought the Lions-Rams game was really fascinating. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a game where three fake kicks and they all worked and they were all brilliant.
Yep.
I mean, it was really crazy. And I give Dan Campbell credit. He went into that game. We were going to take big swings. And then at the end of the game, there's an interception by Goff. And I thought, oh, I've seen this before. You know, Jalen Ramsey comes, jumps it, gets the pick. Did this feel like the classic game to you where you really saw the difference Stafford to Goff in critical moments?
Yeah, I didn't need this game to tell me that, but Stafford's a high-level talent, and there's two things that have really stood out with Matthew Stafford this year when I watched the tape. Number one, they lead the league in playing out of empty sets, and Stafford really likes empty sets, and you can tell that just from watching the tape. You can tell, and I guarantee that they get tells from the defense when they line up in empty sets. They study their particular opponent, obviously, more than I can. So I know for a fact that when they line up in empty sets, because empty sets, it's not just about the quarterback being empty. It's where the receivers are. It's what we call receiver distribution and location. I guarantee they know by the way they align their receivers in empty how the defense will react, and that gives Matthew Stafford a pre-snap piece of information that's critical. The other area that Stafford has been phenomenal in this year is versus blitz. He's been outstanding. He gets rid of the football. He knows where to go with it. He doesn't get sacked. So those two areas have really stood out in watching the tape this year with Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, and that was always a liability with Goff. With pressure, he sometimes unraveled
yes.
quickly. I got to tell you, when I watch quarterbacks, Greg, one of the things I look at is what are the plays called? So Carson Wentz is a dome quarterback, comes into a monsoon. He has a couple of bad early turnovers. And yet, I thought they coached him aggressively in the second half. Contrary to what the Niners do with Garoppolo, where I thought it was very rigid, very limited, I see a coach that doesn't trust his quarterback. But I'm watching Carson Wentz right now, and I'm like, you know, despite a lot of injuries to receiver, a lot of injuries to the offensive line, Carson Wentz to me so far, this experiment, Greg, it's worked. My eyes tell me it's working. What does the film say?
You're correct. It is working. And he did have the one bad turnover, and that was it. But Carson Wentz is playing with a sense of timing and rhythm that we had not really seen much in Philadelphia in each of the previous two seasons. And I think Frank Reich has helped him with that with a lot of play action. Play action when the quarterback is under center, Colin, gives you much better timing and rhythm than play action in the shotgun. And I've had this conversation with quarterbacks. They much prefer the drop back, the sense that they can get their steps, the timing that's involved in playing under center with the play action pass game. You're seeing a lot of that with the Colts offense. And the one thing, well, there's two things we're not seeing from Carson Wentz this year. He's not getting stuck in the pocket where it seems as if he has nowhere to go with the ball, and he's not moving randomly, seemingly with no purpose. So we're seeing a quarterback that's always been a high-level talent now playing far more to that talent.
So Tom Brady this week, I asked him a question on a kind of an interview session about if he could change one thing in the NFL, what would it be? And he said the game's become too much of a skills competition, that there's only one way to win. If you have a great quarterback and great weapons, it's virtually, you can't touch anybody. The safety can't hit anybody. I can basically make throws now I wouldn't have made 5 years ago because the safety can't hit anybody. And when you watch him play, you know, we wouldn't say Tom Brady's evolved. You know, in your 40s, you're not evolving. But what are you seeing now with Tom that maybe you didn't see 5 years ago?
Well, I'd answer that this way. I don't think he's different in any meaningful way, but given his age, I would say that what continues to stand out to me is he's throwing the ball with an awful lot of zip and velocity. I would say his arm strength is as good and maybe better than it's ever been. And by arm strength, I'm not talking about 50 or 60 yard throws down the field, Colin. That's not really representative of arm strength. Arm strength is reflected much more in when you have to drive the ball 18 to 20 yards in the middle of the field or throw it in windows between zone defenders.
Yeah.
That's where arm strength really comes in. And he's really driving the ball effectively because this offense is a very interesting mix of some of the things he did in New England, which are shorter option type things, and then the sort of the deeper concepts that Bruce Arians and sort of his protege Byron Leftwich like to do. So it's an interesting mix, but he is really throwing the ball well with good velocity.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I saw Derek Carr's numbers in the previous two games with Gruden and Derek Carr's numbers in the last two games without him. And they were totally different, but that could be, I don't want to jump to anything. You watch the film.
No.
Last couple weeks, though, he's been, and I think we both like Carr more than most. I think he's been sensational. What has changed post-Gruden? Has anything changed? Has the competition, the secondary's gotten worse, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't studied each route to say, okay, they like this more than they like that. But I think certainly when you play a team like the Eagles, who are very, very predictable defensively and really don't present a lot of difficult challenges for a quarterback. I mean, not that you expect a quarterback to go 31 for 34, but I think that game was not necessarily a good measure of where they stand as a pass game. Although I think their pass game has been very, very good this year. And I think one thing they do have is they do have a really good mix of design shots down the field, which I thought they were doing more of this year, both under Gruden, and I think that will continue under Greg Olsen.
Yeah.
Because as you and I have discussed, I always felt earlier in his career, basically up through last year to some degree, I always thought Carr was a bit risk averse.
Yes.
So I think you have to design downfield shots for him so that he feels comfortable turning those loose.
Yeah. No, Henry Ruggs helps too. It helps when you have one of the faster guys in the league.
No question.
Yeah. So let's talk about this. I thought Cincinnati would play Baltimore well. I did not think they would blow them out. Let's first talk about this. Cincinnati's run defense, and I said this last week, the data showed you it was pretty good against the run, Cincinnati, better than people would think, and they shut down Lamar. What did they do defensively to shut down the Ravens?
Well, I'd say they did a couple of things. I mean, one of the things that really stood out to me was they played, and this is tactical stuff now, they played two dime packages, meaning with six defensive backs, and they did this on third down. And one of these defensive dime packages on third down was clearly designed to play against Mark Andrews, because they played one of them with a fourth corner, and that was Trey Flowers, who just got there. But in dime, they pretty much went man to man when he was the dime, and they said, "You've got Mark Andrews." So they put a corner on Mark Andrews in third down situations. Andrews only had one third down catch, and it did not come in the man-to-man situation against Flowers. So that was one thing in particular that they did a lot of. And then in the second half, they lined up in pressure fronts, six and seven man fronts, and showed what we would, might call zero coverage looks. It wasn't press man, but they did not have a middle of the field safety. And when you do that as an offense, you're not sure who's coming, who's not coming. You have to keep people in to protect, and it limits the number of eligible receivers, and that limits Lamar's ability to throw the ball.
Any revelations on Joe Burrow? He keeps getting better. What does the film say, Greg?
I wouldn't say there's a revelation, because I love Joe Burrow coming out. I think they really understood one thing. What do you get when you play the Ravens, Colin? You get a lot of multiple front looks, a lot of pressure looks. They beat you with pressure. They don't have that one pass rusher. They beat you with their looks and their schemes. So what did they do on third down? Protection first. You have no pass game without protection. So they kept Perine and Uzoma in the backfield to make sure that they could handle any pressure concept, and they made sure that Joe Burrow was comfortable and upright, and Burrow by nature is a very comfortable player to begin with.
All right, so we're going to talk about the Titans here. They've beaten the Chiefs badly and the Bills back-to-back weeks, and their offense does present some problems, does it not, with King Henry?
Yeah, it presents more problems when their pass game works well off of their run game, and when they convert third downs, which they had a really hard time with earlier in the season, and they've started to pick that up the last 2 weeks. Because no offense, if it's totally one-dimensional, particularly one-dimensional running the ball, as good as Henry is, it's very difficult, because just percentage-wise, Colin, you do not get as many big plays, chunk plays in the run game as you do in the pass game. But third down is very critical in this league, as we all know. And I think that's where they've gotten better the last couple of weeks. And I think we can go to the play, because this was a third down touchdown to A.J. Brown. And you'll see here that he ends up throwing it to Brown on the outside to the left. It was one-on-one. But how did they get to this? Tannehill's in the shotgun. It's a 3-by-1 set. And what you're going to see here is Jones is the boundary X to the short side of the field. Brown is number one to the trip side. It looks like press man coverage across the board by the Chiefs. But there's one tell here that's really important, and that's that safety. He's what we call capped over that inside slot corner, which means that the slot corner is going to blitz, and that safety is going to then play man-to-man on the number three receiver to trips. So what does that tell Tannehill? He's got Brown one-on-one on the outside to the trip side with no safety help at all, and he'll take that every time.
Yep.
And it's Brown versus Mike Hughes, and that's a touchdown. You see the one-on-one matchup. Brown is a big physical receiver.
Yep.
He can win those matchups vertically.
Greg Cosell, 42 years, NFL film. As always, we got smarter. Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
You bet. Yeah, that's it. Interesting about what he said about Stafford. Stafford loves when there's no backs behind him, and a lot of that is because it really forces the defense to show their hand. You put three and four receivers out, you get a much clearer sense. Bottom line is everybody's spread out. Stafford is – Rams' offensive line does not get a lot of love outside of Whitworth. Most people can't name anybody else. They're very good at tackle. They've gotten better on the interior, and Stafford is throwing from a clean pocket and quickly a lot. And he also said, Greg said, he's great against the blitz, which was always Goff's weakness. Is it Stafford can get you into a play. That's what we say about these young quarterbacks. Goff, early in his career, he just couldn't handle it. Justin Fields, it's hard. Zach Wilson, it's hard. That's where the veteran quarterback's like, oh, yeah, I've been in here 13 years. I've seen every blitz in the book. And Stafford's a much better quarterback versus pressure because a lot of it he audibles out of or can see it before it happens.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Tonight on Thursday Night Football, division leaders square off as Aaron Rodgers and the Packers take on Kyler Murray and the Cardinals. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific on Fox NFL Network and streaming on Prime Video.
Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card end of the first year automatically with no limit. Get used to hearing yes. Discover.com/yes. It's going to be very good tonight. As long as you have your star quarterbacks, the game's entertaining.
Yes.
Saints, Seahawks, we had everybody except the star quarterbacks, is terrible. So this will be entertaining tonight. Is it an exact replica of what it would be later in the year if they met in the playoffs? We don't have J.J. Watt. We don't have Davante Adams. Lazard's not going to play. But if you got the quarterback, it's entertaining. So I'll be watching tonight. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, it was a bumpy start for the Colts, starting 0-3. They have won three of their last four games, and they head into a very important game with the Titans this weekend.
It feels like, you know, these are the two best teams easily in this division. So this is the game. This is the game of the season. Boy, it's may have to call some odds makers. Where do I go on this?
Well, Carson Wentz's play has been a big factor in turning it around, and Frank Reich is looking forward to seeing Wentz continue to improve.
I'm really looking for the new the Colts version of him that can you know, where he just keeps getting better and better. And but what we are seeing is he's playing good football. I really like the way he's pushing the ball down the field, how aggressively he's thinking, but still making good decisions, checking it down when he needs to. He's doing a great job in the run game, you know, when we need to get to the right checks in the run game, managing the game the right way and making plays and being good situationally.
I like how in a monsoon he had an ugly first half. And he never lost confidence, nor did they lose confidence in him. That was a tough game. He had a turnover that was so bad early.
Oh, my God.
But it never affected him.
And that's the important part. Not all interceptions and not all turnovers are the same.
That's right.
Not all sacks are the same.
That's right.
That was
one of those, it was an all-time bad one.
That was one of those turnovers where it was like,
what did I just watch?
What? There was no one there. It threw it right to him. Well, the Colts are home. And they are 1.5-point favorites against the Titans.
I know.
To Fox Bet.
I think I like the Colts.
If the Titans beat the Colts, the Titans would be 2-0 against the Colts this season,
yeah,
and would own a 3-game lead.
I know.
In the AFC South.
That's why it does feel bigger for the Colts.
Well, the Titans would also own the head-to-head tiebreaker over the Colts, Bills, and Chiefs.
Yep.
If the Colts beat the Titans, the Colts would split the season series, and they'd only be 1 game back of the Titans in the AFC South. So while for the long term, it is more important for the Colts right now, the Titans would love to get this and put some huge separation between several other teams.
Barring an injury, it feels like, okay, it's your division because you have the tiebreaker. Yep. So it really feels like if the Titans win this week, I tend to like desperate teams that have talent. I think the Colts feel desperate. They're at home. I like the Colts in this spot.
This is a very, very big game this weekend. So Justin Fields is coming off the worst performance of his Bears career, albeit a short Bears career.
Yeah, not much of one yet.
Yeah. And 38-3 loss to the Bucs last week. He threw 0 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, and lost 2 of his 3 fumbles. And leading up to his next game against the 49ers, he was asked if he'd like to do more RPOs and play action going forward. And his answer is, I'd like to score touchdowns no matter how. Things have gotten a little ugly in Chicago over the past couple weeks. It feels like, again, this is I say it all the time, that you should just give him the team, because it's felt like we have just had a bit of a controversy or something to discuss in Chicago since the beginning of the season, starting with Andy Dalton's QB1. The 49ers are favored by 4 against the Bears this weekend.
Oh, moved up. So the betting public likes the Niners. I don't like either of them.
I don't know where to go in this game. The Bears do have a good defense, and the 49ers are dealing with a lot of injuries and are not looking great either. But again, I don't I don't really know what I'm supposed to expect from the Bears this year. I think the expectations are far exceeding what the reality is.
Yeah.
And part of that is because Matt Nagy has been there, and there was a lot of hype and buzz for Justin Fields. And then it kind of got squished a little bit with the Andy Dalton thing, and now Justin Fields is struggling, which is not entirely surprising. He's a rookie quarterback, and they don't have a good offensive line. It just feels very choppy there. I don't know what this team is going to look like next season and who's going to be running it or if Nagy's even going to be there. I don't know that it's necessarily Nagy's fault, but again, it just doesn't feel like they have any direction.
I think that's totally fair. Yeah.
That's what's missing from them.
Yeah.
So just four games into the Sixers season, Joel Embiid is dealing with some knee issues. He suffered a minor knee injury in the season opener against the Pelicans. And according to Ramona Shelburne, Embiid said he couldn't walk for 2 days afterwards. There's reportedly a sense that he should take a game or two to get fully healthy, but he's been playing through it because of Ben Simmons' absence. Embiid wants to show his leadership while his teammate gets mentally and physically ready to play. They lost to the Knicks Tuesday. Embiid had 14 points on 2 of 7 shooting with 6 rebounds in 30 minutes. So this would be a time, obviously, that they could use Ben Simmons. He's not available, and they're still working through that situation. I don't know what to make of the Sixers right now, like how we should even really be evaluating them, because we don't know if Ben Simmons is going to come back. And now he's in this space where he's dealing with his mental health and dealing with his back issues. I would not advise them to push through this type of injury, though, with Joel Embiid. If everything is going to move forward as it was planned at the beginning of the season, which is that Ben Simmons wants out and they're going to eventually look for a great trade, you don't want Embiid hurt. Now that's a complete collapse, which is what the concern was when you were trying to pick which one of these guys to move forward with in the first place, as Embiid has these injuries. So I get it from Embiid's perspective. He wants to be out there and show that this is his team, especially if Ben Simmons is not going to be there moving forward, but definitely concerning.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
So I thought this was interesting, Joy. Matt Cassel played in the NFL for 14 years. Now he's a broadcaster. And he came out and he said, where does Mac, because he covers a lot of Patriots. He said, where does Mac Jones rank, the rookie quarterback for New England, rank among the best quarterbacks drafted in 2018? So he said, I'm only going to count 10. And this is where he ranked him. He put Josh Allen number one, Lamar two, Kyler 3, Joe Burrow 4, Justin Herbert 5. I don't have a problem with it. Nothing, that doesn't bother me. I think I'd move around the next five a little. Mac Jones 6, Baker 7, Daniel Jones 8, Trevor Lawrence 9, Tua 10. Now, I do think Trevor Lawrence is absolutely more gifted than Daniel Jones and Baker Mayfield and Mac Jones. But he doesn't have a lot of starts, so I can understand it.
I would also put Baker above Mac Jones. He's one of playoff game.
Yeah, I'm not outraged by anything.
Yeah.
But I've said this before, I do think it's really important for young people that they need career momentum. I've been doing this a long time. I've had some successes, so has Joy. You know, I'm not desperate for momentum. I've had it for about 15 years. I'm fine. But for young people who are talented, they need the kingmaker. They need somebody to put their arms around them. Tua's never had that. And I'll give you a great example. So let's go to Tua's first. We'll play blind resume game. So he's got Tua as the 10th. As the 10th.
Yeah.
The worst that he ranks, right? So Tua in his 13 games, 7-6, winning record, 66% completion percentage, 2-1, touchdown interception, and a 90 passer rating. This is with no running game and a bad O-line, and Will Fuller has been a bust. So blind resume, let's look at one of these other guys through 13 starts. He's got a losing record. Tua's got a better completion percentage, a better record, actually a better TD interception ratio, slightly worse passer rating. Who is that? Oh, it's Baker. Now, my point here isn't to rip Baker. My point is Baker has always been defended and had support. Tua doesn't have any. So Baker and Tua in their first 13 starts had similarities. They entered dysfunctional organizations. Both were rebuilding. Both had terrible offensive lines and no running game. Tua, his team is bailing on him. Baker, if I suggest that the team's not built around Baker, I get pushback. This is why it's so vital for young people. You need a kingmaker, whether it's in my business, an agent, a boss that says they're good. Because when you go into, when you start in any business, you're a young lawyer, you're a young broadcaster, it doesn't matter what you are, a young landscaper. You don't have the finances, you don't have the momentum, you don't have the capital, you're going to make mistakes, you're going to have turbulence. Support matters. And it's interesting, Tua and Baker's numbers, they really entered the same thing. Dysfunctional, bad O-lines, no running game, often had to win games on their own. And Tua's numbers match right up. Tua, they're moving off. Baker still defending. And Baker's made several missteps in front of the microphone, said things that, you know, call out the medical staff. One's got support, one doesn't. So that's why I say Tua, if he plays well, 7 of the next 10 games, he matches up very well against the other quarterbacks. He plays a lot of, you know, guys that are, could be a Zach Wilson, could be a Sam Darnold. If Tua looks good 7 of the next 10 weeks, I'm not asking him to beat Lamar Jackson. I'm not asking him to beat Josh Allen. But if he looks good, there's some runway here. He will get another chance. He really deserves another chance if he plays well. I really do believe that. And I'm not a huge Tua guy, but he does deserve a second chance. He just have never really had any career momentum and any real support. Weather's changing. Stay comfortable. How? Tommy John underwear. 16 million pairs sold. They don't have customers. They have fanatics. Get 20% off your first order. How? TommyJohn.com/herd. TommyJohn.com/herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fox Bet Super 6 wants you to stack the cash, scan the QR code, download the app, and enter the free-to-play NFL Sunday Challenge contest. Make your picks and then invite your friends to play as well. The jackpot is almost up to $200,000. The more people who enter, the bigger it gets.
Albert Breer, Monday morning quarterback, joins us now. We got all sorts of things happening in this league. Albert Breer. You know, I was talking to somebody yesterday in the NFL I talked to, and he said, you know, this Deshaun thing's no done deal, and Tua's actually playing well. He goes, look at Miami's schedule. He said, 7 of the next 10 weeks, it's not like they play great quarterbacks. What if Tua plays well the rest of the year and Deshaun, they can't get this thing done? Tua, there may be more tarmac to Tua's career than we think. What is the latest on Deshaun Watson's saga and situation with Miami?
Yeah, I don't think it's any sort of fait accompli that anything's going to get done here. And I think Houston's general manager, at the very least, it's an important piece of this. The general manager there, Nick Caserio, is okay with the idea of going forward with him, you know, as a third string quarterback for the rest of the year and then trading him after the season. And one of the things you brought up there, Colin, is an important piece of it, is that things are going to change between now and February. So maybe Miami's not as interested in February and March as they are now.
Right.
But could the Giants be interested? Could the Steelers be interested? Could the Seahawks be interested? Could the Saints be interested? So, you know, the market could look totally different when we get to February and March. But I think the Texans feel very confident that the market, one way or another, is going to be there. So whether or not the owner pushes this, because I know Bob McNair would like, or Cal McNair would like him out of the building. It's possible it happens between now and Tuesday, but I don't think Nick Caserio feels like he absolutely has to get something done before the trade deadline. They've already sort of weathered the PR storm here. So if somebody comes up to Nick Caserio's price, fine. If not, I think they're comfortable where they're at. The Panthers checked in earlier this week. It was the first time they checked in a couple months. They're sort of out now. The Eagles, Broncos just sort of sitting back and monitoring. So we'll see if the Dolphins come up to what the Texans have been asking for.
Mike Tomlin was, you know, I thought it wasn't random when he brought up Sean Payton and Andy Reid. They're not up for the USC job because they both got a Super Bowl. He's got more division titles since he became coach than Payton or Andy Reid do in the last 14 years. He's got a higher winning percentage than Reid and Sean Payton. I think he was ticked off that his name was mentioned for a college job, which there's always been some members of the media in Pittsburgh that sort of, you know, are not Tomlin fanatics. What did you make of the rumor and his reaction?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think his reaction was fine. Like, I understand why he'd be upset with it, because it probably got to him as something other than what it was. It was maybe USC is interested, and it turned into, would Tomlin be interested in them? And so I can understand why he got upset, and I think he did a good job of shutting down speculation. That's how you're going to do it if you truly want to shut down speculation. But I think the larger picture here, Colin, is what teams, what college programs are looking at when they're looking around the coaching landscape right now, and how Mike Tomlin's been there for 15 years now. He's been there for as long as Bill Cowher was there. And so if you're one of these big-time college programs, or if you're another NFL team and you're looking at hiring a coach, you may say, look at Pittsburgh. Mike Tomlin's been there a long time. Ben Roethlisberger may be on his way out after this year. There's some uncertainty in that organization. Is this the time to go see if Mike Tomlin might be available? And so USC, maybe the Raiders, when we get to the offseason, looks at it and says, yeah, sure, let's make that call. That doesn't mean he's going to go. That doesn't mean he should consider going. But if you're one of those big-time college programs or you're an NFL team, you'd be doing yourself a disservice not to think outside the box and think about guys like that maybe being available.
By the way, you just got back from the NFL owner meetings. Most of this stuff is boring to me. There's a lot of stuff I don't care about. The Washington football team stuff, I know a lot of people are, engaged on that. Was there anything from the owner meetings that you took that you found kind of interesting?
I mean, the Washington football team stuff's going to be interesting going forward, whether or not Dan Snyder's the owner of that team 5 years from now. I think that's going to be something to watch. Like, I don't think anything's going to happen immediately, but, you know, could there be pressure from other owners, from the league in the future? I certainly think that that's something that's not completely off the table. Obviously, I think we'd all like to see a full written report there. The chances of that coming aren't great at this point. I also think, you know, it's sort of the larger picture when it comes to that. Where ownership is right now across the NFL, you know, Seth Wickersham wrote a pretty fascinating piece on ESPN about the interplay as it relates to the St. Louis lawsuit and kind of what's going on between the Rams and Chargers and how the Cowboys owner and the Patriots owner, they're taking sides on it. These guys haven't been in the same room with each other in 22 months. The last time that these guys had an in-person owners meeting was in December of 2019. And so I think that there are still some grudges, some hard feelings that need to be worked out. And so that was sort of an interesting thing that was happening in the background. And then, of course, I think, you know, just how the Deshaun Watson situation was lingering over this. Usually this is a business meeting, something where, you know, there's updates on how the season's going, television ratings, all those sorts of things. The Deshaun Watson thing did loom over this, you know, So you saw David Tepper there, you saw Stephen Ross there, sort of reminded you how ownership's going to play into this. And, I think some of the trepidation that Stephen Ross has about, you know, taking on a player who has this amount of stuff going on, certainly was something that I think you take into account when you're in that setting.
All right. By the way, Davante Adams, nope, not going to play. Lazard, not going to play. Green Bay. Let me throw this at you. When you talk to your sources, what do they make of Kansas City right now? What do people make of the Chiefs?
So I think that there's a number of different things at work. Number one, the offensive line. I think that's an obvious one. Having talked to people really since the trade, there were real questions about how Orlando Brown was going to fit as a left tackle in a pass-happy offense.
Yeah.
A lot of people felt like with the Ravens, he was in the perfect situation. Run-based offense, they're not doing a lot of drop-back passing, and he's going to get to run block a lot at right tackle. Moving him to left tackle in a pass-happy offense, big question there. Having five new offensive linemen, I know Remmers is back in the lineup now, but having five new offensive linemen to start the season, there's a lot to work out when it comes to that. And if you want to calm down your problems with the offensive line, Colin, how do you do it? Short passing game, easy completions, running game. And that's not who the Chiefs have been, and they've been resistant to go there early this year. I think there are cases where Patrick Mahomes isn't taking the easy completion. He's playing too much hero ball. And also where, you know, you see them not leaning on the running game when they should, even with Clyde Edwards-Helaire hurt. So I think there are some issues on offense that are going to need to work themselves out. And then defensively, it's pretty simple. Their two best players on defense, based on how they've paid them, have to be Chris Jones and Frank Clark. Those guys have been banged up and not as good this year. And having those guys at less than 100% of what they should be has exposed an ordinary back seven. So I'd say the keys are being able to manage that offensive line in different ways going forward, and then getting a whole lot out more out of Frank Clark and Chris Jones over the last 11 weeks of the season.
Good stuff, Albert Breer. Good talking to you, Albert.
All right, thanks, Colin.
You know, it's interesting he brought up Stan Kroenke moving from St. Louis to Los Angeles. There was a point in the NFL when they moved the Raiders from Oakland to Vegas and the Chargers from San Diego to L.A. and the Rams from St. Louis to L.A. And I remember going on the air saying, this is way too much movement. Like, it's too fast. It's like 18 months they're all moving. The Raider move has been a home run. The Rams move has been a home run. And Justin Herbert has helped the Chargers move look pretty good. So you can say what you want. NBA's lost 36% of their TV ratings in 2 years. They've got issues with China right now. They've got, you know, you got NBA's got some cable TV rating issues where they're plummeting in number. NFL made 3 big bets, and they're all working. And by the way, part of why they're working, I know this is simple, 3 good quarterbacks. Stafford, Justin Herbert, and Derek Carr. The teams are fun to watch. The teams score a lot of points. The teams, I mean, this is really, I mean, just think about these moves. If you were bad at quarterback with the Rams, the Chargers, and the Raiders, those moves would look like not unstable, but they'd be like, we'd be asking, was that a good move? The quarterbacks, that's how valuable the quarterback is. These teams are scoring. They're fun to watch. There's a lot of optimism. There's wins. There's hopes. They're near the top of their division. So the moves all look good. They all look good. I mean, quarterback, not just field, branding, marketing, franchise, move. You get that right, you basically are fine. It's hard to have a great quarterback and have struggles in the league. I mean, everything works. Hour 3 next.